This is The Guardian.
Hi, Regid Ahmed here on Gadigal Land. As Hungary goes to the polls this weekend, we're bringing you an episode from The Guardian's international news podcast, Today in Focus, on why JD Vance made a special trip to the country this week to rally support for current Prime Minister Viktor Orban. His far-right government and leadership has been seen as a model for Donald Trump's presidency. But Orban is now facing a real electoral test.
Thank you. Wow.
With the US in the middle of a war, you might think JD Vance had better things to do than fly to Hungary this week. Yet right as Trump was threatening to wipe out civilization in Iran, the vice president appeared live on stage in Budapest alongside Viktor Orban, the prime minister of Hungary.
So before I started my remarks, I actually had a special guest that asked that I give him a phone call. Let's hope he actually answers. So this is going to be very embarrassing.
I'm sorry. The person you were trying to reach has a voicemail box that has not been set up yet.
Okay. Try one more time. It's ringing. It's progress. Hello, Mr. President. How are you?
Hi. Hey, JD, could you give me a second? I'm just...
Mr. President, you are on with about 5,000 Hungarian patriots, and I think they love you even more than they love Viktor Orban.
Well, I can't believe that. I can't believe that because I love Hungary and I love that Viktor. I'll tell you, he's a fantastic man. We've had a tremendous relationship.
Trump sang Orban's praises.
He didn't allow people to storm your country and invade your country like other people have and ruin their countries, frankly. He's kept your country good. He's kept Hungarian people in your country. And he's done a fantastic job. And let me tell you...
Vance made no attempt to hide why he was there.
We have got to get Viktor Orban reelected as Prime Minister of Hungary, don't we?
Though he insisted he wasn't telling people how to vote in this Sunday's election.
I'm not telling you exactly who to vote for. But what I am telling you is that the bureaucrats in Brussels, those people should not be listened to. Listen to your hearts, listen to your souls, and listen to the sovereignty of the Hungarian people.
But the fact he made the trip, with his wife Usha in tow, 20 weeks pregnant with their fourth child, shows just how keenly the Trump administration is watching this election, which could be the most consequential in the whole of Europe this year. Because if the polls are correct, Orban is on his way out, after 16 consecutive years as Prime Minister. But why do Trump and Vance care so much about a tiny country 4,500 miles away from Washington? And what will it mean for them and their movement if Orban falls? From The Guardian, I'm Helen Pitt. Today in Focus, could this be the end of the dictator? Flora Gerenvogi, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Flora, we're talking just after the US Vice President JD Vance made quite an unusual trip to Budapest, dragging along his pregnant wife for the ride. And as we've heard already, Vance called Trump on the phone when Trump was in the middle of like threatening to wipe out Iran, negotiating a ceasefire. Why does Trump care so much about the elections of a country so far away, a country with just 9 million people?
Hungary has been a model for the Trump presidency for a while now.
Viktor, we love Viktor. Viktor, I call him. You know, I put the little accent on it. You are fantastic, all right?
And U.S. Republicans looked at Hungary for these past years as a model to follow, basically. Orban's family policies were really the appeal for them. They were thinking about implementing something similar in U.S. policies as well. But I think there's a lot more to this topic. Orban is currently on his fourth consecutive term. And the fact that he has been so successful and he had similar narratives, similar ideologies to U.S. Republicans in terms of immigration, for example, I think they have found a link to connect with Orban, and they were studying his success.
And what did that model look like? What was this blueprint that Orban provided for Trump and others to follow?
Some of the things that we are seeing happening in the U.S. have already happened in Hungary. A crackdown on the independence of the judiciary, also taking over institutions such as universities, and a general hostility towards global institutions.
And let's talk a bit about what it's been like as a journalist reporting on Orban. In September 2022, a European Parliament report said that Hungary can no longer be considered a full democracy and labelled it an elected autocracy. And we know that with the autocracies come a crackdown on the media. Yeah, what's it been like for journalists?
When I started out, it was much easier to talk to politicians. It was much easier to get answers from government institutions. So when I send out a media inquiry now, I'm 100% sure that I'm not going to get an answer. There is a risk if you publish something that is critical of the government that the pro-government media will publish a smear article about you where they call you all sorts of different things, such as a spy. So right now, about 80% of the media is in the hands of the government or somebody just close or friendly to Orban.
So tell me, how materially has Hungary changed since he's been in power?
Hungary has changed a lot in the sense that this country had a really promising glimpse of democracy, that it's going to be a democratic country, and then we're going to be part of the EU, going to receive EU funds, and then the future looked bright when he started out in politics. But then he took a more of a turn to the far right. As someone who was born in Hungary, grew up in Hungary, what I can see is that it's a country where it's increasingly risky to say your political opinion out loud because it can cost your job or your financial situation.
He made this really quite startling statement in 2014 that he was building an, quote, illiberal state.
Ilyen értelemben tehát az az új állam, amit Magyarországon építünk, az illiberális állam.
What did he mean by that?
So he made that famous speech in Balatisnad, Romania, where he spoke about Hungary being an illiberal democracy. What that meant is that he limited media pluralism in Hungary. Propaganda was starting to become a part of state media, and he reshaped institutions and he took over institutions that did not belong to the government before.
Right, okay. And I wonder, do you think that people liked having this strongman leader? They liked his idea, this is Hungary first, that we're going to put national interests ahead of global interests. Do you think that was a key factor in his success for so long?
Definitely. I think for his supporters, that was a message that they were very much on board with. When you talk to Viktor Orban's supporters, they will tell you that they love him as a person and that he defended the country from all of these enemies. And he's a great leader who defends our country also in Brussels from leaders of the EU. His friendship with Donald Trump is also a big one for his supporters. They are very proud of that relationship between the US president and Viktor Orban. He poses as this regular Hungarian guy. He often emphasizes that he's from Felcud, which is a small town, and that is a big part of his image and of his popularity with his supporters.
Orban returned to power in 2010. He'd had an earlier four-year stint, which ended in 2002. But it was probably only in 2015 when most of the rest of the world took notice of what Orban was doing. And that was when he refused to take in Syrian refugees. And I really remember that time so starkly. His position was in stark contrast, wasn't it, to how Angela Merkel in Germany approached the issue. She famously said, "Wir schaffen das, you know, we can cope with this." And Germany ended up taking more than 1 million refugees in. Merkel's out of office. Orban is still there. You've got the AfD, anti-immigration party in Germany, you know, snapping at the heels of the establishment in Germany. To what extent has Orban's harsh line on immigration been seen as a success both within and outside Hungary?
Orban really played that anti-immigration campaign on people's fear. It's really easy to sell an idea to people that there is something to be afraid of when it comes to foreigners, when it comes to different cultures, right? And Orban has been pushing this campaign very successfully. Billboards all over the country were showing a huge mass of Middle Eastern men standing in line, and there was a gigantic stop sign. The message that Hungarians received is that this is something to be scared of, and he built up a propaganda around migrants being violent, especially towards women. And the Hungarian pro-government media really focused on any instance they could find anywhere in the world where a person of immigrant background committed a crime.
You were at this rally in Budapest on Tuesday night. What was it like? How did it compare to Orban rallies of old?
It was really interesting to see Vice President J.D. Vance say very similar sentences to what we have heard from Orban before. So to me, it sounded a lot like an Orban rally, but with English translation, basically, focusing a lot on blaming Brussels bureaucrats for literally everything that is happening right now.
Yeah.
Vance was also talking about a really high level of foreign interference in the Hungarian campaign, which we have heard in the pro-government media quite a lot. But then he went on saying that he's here to help Viktor Orban in this campaign. What he pointed out in that speech that he found concerning, he was doing the exact same thing, basically.
And the pollsters think that a brand new party led by a guy called Peter Magyar will win the elections. Tell me about him.
His surname means Hungarian in Hungarian. It's actually a very common surname here. And he is a very interesting figure because he is coming from the establishment. He is coming from Fidesz, Orban's party. And when watching his documentary, it was really interesting to see when he was asked about his friends currently, you could see him struggle because all of his friends before he turned on Orban were from Fidesz circles. He was the husband of the former justice minister, Judith Varga.
And Peter Magyar seems to be going pretty hard on the idea that Orban's regime is corrupt. How important a role does corruption play in Hungarians seeming to be falling out of love with Orban?
I will give you a very visual example of corruption. So, alluding to Mészáros, Viktor Orban's childhood friend, used to be a gas fitter, and now he is worth more than $4.8 billion. He is now a businessman in construction, energy, banking, media firms, and an estate linked to Mészáros has, according to a report, zebras and other exotic animals on it. And since then, zebras became a symbol of these anti-Orban protests. Zebra toys, like plush toys, and zebra masks and signs are showing up because it's such a huge symbol of this anti-Orban movement this past year. Another big scandal was when it turned out that Hungary's president, Katalin Novak, has co-signed a pardon for a person who was a co-conspirator in a pedophile case in an educational institution. Mm. And the other person who co-signed this paper was Judith Varga, the justice minister.
Ah, yes, the ex-wife of Peter Magyar. I've heard rumours of a sex tape involving him and a former girlfriend, and it gives me the sense that maybe there are some dirty tricks afoot in this election. Tell me about this tape. Is it real?
During this election campaign, Fidesz has really turned on the heat with all of its efforts to win, including floating the idea of a sex tape existing of Magyar.
Mm-hmm.
And what he has said is that we're not really going to see anything else but two consenting adults on this video. Unless it's about drugs or multiple people being involved, I don't think Hungarian society is going to care that much about this tape.
One of the hallmarks of Orbán's regime has been his hostility towards the EU, which I find particularly interesting given that during his first stint as prime minister, which ended in 2002, he was the guy basically preparing for Hungary to join the EU in 2004. But tell us, what is Orbán's problem with the EU and how has that played out over the past 16 years?
His main struggle with the EU is that the funds the EU is sending to Hungary are not being used in an appropriate way. The EU's view is that Orbán is misusing these funds to enrich Orbán circles, and these funds have gone to businessmen in the circles of Fidesz, and it did not benefit the Hungarian people.
The European Commission has decided to take a strong stance against Hungary. It calls on EU countries to freeze 7.5 billion euros of EU cohesion funds, as the country has not made enough progress with its reforms against corruption.
How has that affected your ordinary Hungarian's life?
Where it has been most apparent is that Hungarians are still struggling to make a living. The salaries are not on the level of your average EU salary. We do have free healthcare in Hungary, but it also comes with a really, really long waiting time.
Right.
Hospitals that are not necessarily the most acceptable in Hungary. And this is something that you see on a daily level in Hungarian social media, where Hungarians are showing that this is not the healthcare they signed up for.
What about energy prices? Because one of the claims that J.D. Vance made in Budapest this week is that Hungarians pay lower prices for their electricity and gas because of Orbán's policies. Is that true?
Yes. So partially Orbán's relations to Russia is justified by low energy prices resulting from cheap Russian energy coming to Hungary. So that is one reason where Orbán justifies his really close relations to Putin since the war broke out.
Yeah, and I wonder how that relationship with Putin goes down with your average Hungarian. And I think their friendship has come under particular scrutiny during this campaign, hasn't it? How close are they?
Well, we have just seen a new report by Bloomberg that shows a transcript where Orbán and Putin are on the phone. And Orbán basically is likening himself to a mouse who is standing ready to help Russia, which is the lion.
My goodness.
And he's ready to help Putin as needed based on this transcript. This is not something that we have not suspected before. So we have seen high-level Hungarian officials, including our foreign minister, Szijjártó, traveling to Moscow several times since Russia invaded Ukraine. This is a very unusual thing because if we're looking at the surrounding countries like Poland, this is not something that their foreign ministers or prime ministers are doing. So Hungary has really chosen a path where they have kept their tight relations with Russia despite Russia's attacks.
And there's been a lot of controversy, hasn't there, about a leaked phone call between the Hungarian foreign minister and his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov. Tell me about that.
Hello. Hello, Sergei, this is Peter speaking.
Yes, Peter, are you in St. Petersburg?
So the Washington Post has reported a few weeks ago that Peter Sierto and his Russian counterpart Lavrov has been making phone calls even when Sierto was in Brussels at EU meetings, and he has been forwarding information to Lavrov about what has been going on these closed-door meetings with EU leaders. This is something that has been confirmed to us at The Guardian, too. We reported about this as well. And this has been something that was kind of an open secret in Brussels for a while now. But this is the first time we have seen proof in a form of a recorded phone conversations between the two ministers.
Yeah, it's quite astonishing. I heard a clip of the phone call, and it's really, you know, you could argue that it's a pretty treacherous thing to do.
You were on all headlines in the Russian media today.
Oh, did I say something wrong?
No. They were just saying that you are pragmatically fighting for the interests of your country.
Oh, well, that's a very, analysis of the situation.
Nice way to put it.
Yeah, that's
and given that, you know, one of the biggest points of disagreement between the EU and Hungary in recent years has been Orbán's approach to the Ukraine war and his unwillingness, really, to help the Ukrainians. Can you just briefly outline what Orbán's view is on the Ukraine conflict and how he's using that to try and win re-election?
So there are two things that we have to mention here. One is that when we're walking around here in Budapest, we're seeing Zelensky's face, the Ukrainian president's face, plastered all over these billboards in Hungary. This is a wanted style photo where the text says he's dangerous. And there are other billboards as well where he is shown with EU chief Ursula von der Leyen, and they are shown as the force behind the Hungarian opposition. And the other thing is that Orbán has really built his 2022 election campaign on peace. The slogan was, "We are the country of peace. Our goal is to have peace." But he never really explained what that peace would look like for Ukraine. So we're seeing elements of the 2022 campaign built into this campaign this year, the 2026 one, where pro-government social media campaigns are built on the slogan of, "This is not our war. We want to be excluded from this war. Hungary just wants to be safe." And they are even going a step further where they are saying, "We're not going to send Hungarian troops to Ukraine."
Is that on the table, though? I mean, is that realistic that Hungarian troops could be sent?
Absolutely not.
But still, I can see how that would sort of play into the fears of the population. And as you've already mentioned, if Orbán is telling Hungarians that they've got cheap energy because it's come from Russia, then is there a sympathy towards Russia within the Hungarian population rather than with Ukrainians?
Hungarians are not necessarily sympathetic towards Russia. And I have seen a lot of really kind gestures towards Ukrainians when the war broke out. So Hungarians were willing to offer their couch or their spare room to Ukrainian refugees. I think this is something that is typical of Hungarians, this welcoming spirit towards people in need, and that was really beautiful to see. So I wouldn't say that is a sympathy or leaning towards Russia, but more like accepting this narrative that is coming from the government that this is a necessary relationship.
Coming up, if Orbán loses, will he accept defeat? Let's talk about what could happen next. If Orbán loses the election, as the polls suggest, will he go quietly, do you think? Will there be a peaceful transfer of power?
We have seen Orbán lose before. So he harried the government with obstruction tactics in the parliament, and he really just took politics to the street. There were a lot of protests against that left-wing government at the time. So we can expect something similar this time as well. In terms of peaceful transfer of power, we are seeing a very different Orbán now, and we don't really know what we can expect from him if that happens, because that hasn't happened in 16 years. So I have no predictions for you for that.
No, it's very sensible to not predict the result. But if Orbán goes, how easy would it be for the new government to reverse what many would see as the damage that he's caused?
If they get a two-third majority,
yeah,
they're going to have an easier time reversing those laws and policies that many Hungarians are critical of. And in case of a simple majority, well, Tisza says they have a plan. We have not heard that plan yet of how they are going to execute their campaign promises if the results are tight.
And if Orbán wins yet another term, what can we expect from, would it be his fifth term in government?
It would be his sixth term, and it would be his fifth consecutive term.
Yeah.
And we can expect exactly what he says. I think with nationalists and with far-right politicians, we really have to listen to what they say, because they're going to do exactly that. And with Orbán, he sounded really angry with these last rallies that we have seen from him. And we might expect that anger translate to going after some political enemies and going forward with his far-right policies and maybe further eroding democracy in Hungary.
Retribution sounds familiar, doesn't it?
I am your retribution. I am your retribution. Not going to let this happen.
And as we've discussed, Orbán really wrote the playbook that Trump and others have been using. And in February, Marco Rubio, Trump's Secretary of State, said of Orbán, "Your success is our success." And this election is being called the most important election in Europe this year. If Orbán loses, do you think that his admirers, including Trump, will start to question whether aping him is the way forward? I mean, for Trump, theoretically, this is his second and final term, so he can't stand again. But there'll be others in Europe who look if he loses and think, maybe we need to change course. What do you think?
I think for Trump, what I have heard from my sources is that he does not want to associate with losers. So he will cut ties immediately with Orbán if he loses this election. This is just something that, you know, is the theory, what my sources have told me, but is a very possible.
Yeah, plausible, yes.
And they also explained this visit from J.D. Vance to Budapest, that this is the reason why Trump didn't come and Vance came instead, that Trump does not want to be seen with someone who might lose the elections on Sunday. So from his side, we will probably see a distancing. But in Europe, I think it's going to be a very different picture, because if Orbán loses by a very tight margin, I think he will focus on building his far-right network, far-right group in Europe. He will focus on foreign politics a lot more than domestic for a while. We have seen this behavior from him in these past years as well. And he will try to come back stronger and with a bigger group behind him in Europe.
So it sounds like you think even if Orbán does lose on Sunday, it won't be the last we see of him. Flora, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Flora Garambugi. You can read all of her reporting from Hungary at theguardian.com. She and colleagues will be live blogging the result of the election on Sunday on the Guardian live blog, so watch out for that too. And that is all for today. This episode was produced by Ned Carter-Miles, Guy Zafman and Natalie Katena, presented by me, Helen Pidd. Sound design was by Ross Burns, and executive producer was Elizabeth Cassin. We'll be back in your feeds this afternoon with the latest.
This is The Guardian.